coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen. I'm filling in for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. As usual, Zorba, few topics to talk about today.
Yes, we're going to talk about smartphone use and parenting, information that you may find very interesting, the opposite of what you would expect. So think about that, and then I'll let you know what the skinny is on that. And then we're going to talk about diabetes, what you eat, fruits and vegetables, whole grains. Can you actually prevent diabetes? It's not just what you don't eat, it's what you do eat that really makes a difference. Some very interesting data from the British Medical Journal, the BMJ.
And what is the special recipe today?
Mozzarella, tomato, and orzo salad. Salad is good any time of year, but mozzarella, which I love, tomatoes are great this time of year, and orzo, what could be wrong with this? You know, it's a recipe that even Tom Clark in his famous kitchen could actually put together. You know, Tom, and the amazing kitchen that he has probably
legendary.
Puts this together. It's the legendary kitchen of Tom Clark and Monica Petkus. You got it, baby.
800-462-7413 is the number to call, or you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just hear yourself on an upcoming episode of the show. That's 800-462-7413. And like we said, I'm happy to announce we're going to, later in the show, we're going to hear from Tom Clark in his magical kitchen.
Magical, legendary, imaginative kitchen. That's exactly
right. With his walk-in cooler.
The walk-in cooler.
With all his TV dinners. We've talked about that.
That's right. The sous chefs just standing around waiting to chop veggies, but he goes, it's okay.
All right. We've been combing through all the voicemails you leave us. Of course, Zorba's going to answer a lot of those questions throughout the program. And let's kick it off with the calls today. Here is a caller in Middleburg, Florida.
My question for Dr. Zorba is, how does wearing a face mask affect my oxygen level if I'm breathing carbon dioxide, exhaling and inhaling my used breath? Thank you. Bye.
That's a great question. And that question has come up lots of times as to whether or not what is actually going to occur. In other words, are you putting carbon dioxide in your body? And then is it not good for you because of that? It turns out when you wear a mask, you actually, although you rebreathe your own breath, which has carbon dioxide, it turns out it really is not that bad. It really does not make a difference for 98% of the people. Now, who does it make a difference in? Well, it's those people who have COPD, who actually have COPD and they actually have nasal prongs in their nose. So they're breathing in oxygen from an oxygen tank. That can make a difference for them. And so what do you do if they're on a portable oxygen tank and they're actually going inside and going to buy something in a store? And the answer is they probably have to run their oxygen a little bit higher. But for everyone else, nope, doesn't make a difference. Wear a mask. You can wear a loose-fitting mask. You know, that would be okay for you because a lot of people feel claustrophobic with a mask. So, you know, wearing something that's loose-fitting might be just perfect.
Yeah, and we've been getting, especially on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page, just a lot of questions about masks. It seems to be a really hot topic right now. And I just wanted to share something that Cheryl on Facebook wrote about masks. I thought it was kind of funny. Cheryl says, "We already have booze it and lose it, and we have click it or tick it. So how about a slogan, mask it or casket?"
I love it.
What do you think?
I love it. I think it's right. Mask it or casket. That's it. I can just see it up in lights. I can see it in billboards. And I can see it on those things that people wear when they walk down the street, you know, whatever you call, you know, the things in front of them and in back of them. I don't know. What do they call those things anyway?
I think it's a sandwich board sign.
Sandwich board. Yeah. Mask it or casket. You know, it'd be mask it or casket, and I'm selling masks, by the way. Perfect. You know what, Carol? You've got something else that you can do to earn extra money in this time of COVID.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Just leave us a voicemail with your healthy living question. And let's keep those calls coming. Here is a listener in Spokane, Washington.
My question is about some conversations that I've been having with friends about if the pandemic is getting worse or if it's just really optics. Some people will argue that the reason our numbers are higher is because of increased testing. They'll also point to the fact that the death or the mortality rate has gone down recently. And finally, perhaps the reason why the curve hasn't gone down yet in the United States is because it got here a lot later than the other large developed countries. Thank you.
All good questions. All perfect. So let's talk about them. Carl, you remember like in fourth grade, you learned about percentage, right?
Oh, sure. Ratios, yeah. Percentage.
Ratios, yeah. And yep. Percentage. So one of the things we look at, first of all, we do have increased testing. And the reason that we're seeing more in the news isn't because there isn't more there. It's that there is more there, but the increased testing, of course, shows more. But you look at the ratio of positives, and that gives you an idea of what it's in the community. So if it's 5% of all the tests are positive versus 20% of all the tests are positive, that means you've got more in the community. So looking at the ratio gives you an idea of how much is actually there. So the numbers have to be increased when you've got a higher ratio in the community. It's not just a function of the testing. And that's been out there in the blogosphere. We're just testing more people. That's because there are more positives. The answer is there are more positives and we're testing more people, but the ratio is what counts. If it's 20% out of 100, you got a lot of COVID in that area. So that's number one. His second question had to do about death. Well, one of the reasons we're seeing less death is we're learning how to keep COVID people from dying. So they're in the hospital, right? Mm-hmm. They may be in the ICU. They may be on a ventilator, but we're learning what to do to keep them from being on a ventilator. But they're still really, really sick. And the death statistics are going to really lag behind the statistics in the community. Why? Because you've got more people in the community positive, basically in their 20s and 30s. But eventually, older people are the ones who die in this particular epidemic. So you still have those older people die, not as much as before. But we still have, we're over 100,000 deaths. And the reality is probably by the end of the year, we're going to be at about 200 or 250,000 deaths. Why? Look at the numbers. They're basically increasing. And the final thing about this is this. There's a lot of bad news. Are you shocked by that, Carl, that there's bad news out there?
Are you shocked? Not really.
I mean, you know, so there are people who believe that, that this actually is a whole fake thing, that it's done by the dark planet, you know, that there are zombies out there that are making lots of money. But the answer is science really always wins. And science shows this really is a pandemic and it really is a problem because the death rate is still 10 to 20 times what the death rate is for influenza. My recommendation, go to scientific website, Johns Hopkins great, Mayo Clinic great, go to reliable sources, Wisconsin Public Radio, National Public Radio, go to newspapers. I go to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal because I get different views from both, but from a scientific point of view, they are both in the top sphere.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a message with a question and Zorba might just answer that. Let's get back to those calls in a little bit. But first, Zorba, let's get into our first topic. Now, this one surprised me. Do smartphones have a negative impact when it comes to parenting?
You would think they always have a negative impact because we see sometimes where they do have a negative impact. You go to a soccer game and it's like parents are looking at their smartphones. They're not looking at the kids in the soccer game. And so right. They miss the goal and they miss all the other stuff like that. And I always say, you know, there's a button on your phone. I don't know if you ever saw this button on your phone, Carl, but it's an off button and you actually turn it off.
They've made it harder to do that now. It seems like you have to hold it down and like it's like a two-step process to turn
off your phone. It's a two-step process. Then you look at the little thing go bing, 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 yep. Bing. A little visual thing go, oh my God, I'm not connected to people. Yeah. But parents worry about spending time in their smartphones having a negative impact on their relationship to children. But an article in the Journal of Child Psychiatry and Psychology said it's unlikely to be the case. And this was an analysis of close to 4,000 people based on surveys that have different processes of smartphones and parenting and looked at how people use them and whether or not it really displaced time with their family. And they actually found low level of displacing time with families for families who use their smartphones appropriately. So these are not people who are always looking at the phone. You know, there are always people who are looking at their phone, not looking at others. But they looked at people who are looking at their phone in a smart way with family engagements. In other words, are they checking on their children? Are they looking to see what's happening for dinner? Are they looking to see what's happening with their life and connecting things, looking at positive experiences? That smartphone use might actually assist parents in positive outcomes. It's not always negative. Now, I got to ask you some questions, Carl. Okay. You got a couple of children, right?
I have two children, yes.
Now, when do you use your smartphone around your kids?
Oh, you know, this topic, it's probably more than I should. And I don't know if
I'm
alone.
What is more than
that.
I should? What is more than I should?
I mean, there are times when I'm playing with the kids. You know, they're 2 and 5, so it's a lot of hands-on. They're all over me all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, there's times where they're playing and you just kind of – it's weird. Right. You're just drawn to your phone. So you just
look
at
it. Well, you might take a break. You might take a break. I mean, frankly, we had 4 kids and sometimes a little boring playing with children. I mean, they're interested, but, you know, look at this and it's a little boring. But now when you go out to an event with them, back in the day when you went out to an event with them, mm-hmm. and let's say you're going 5-year-old, does your 5-year-old go to play soccer or anything like that?
No, but like, you know, swimming or something like
Something like that.
Tennis.
So, I mean, tennis. So you're going to be watching them. Are you careful with how much you use your phone?
Yeah, when there's other distractions around, like an event or something, sure. Yeah, there's a lot less phone use during that than just sitting at home.
That's what it is. It's not a black and white thing. And I think this study from this journal shows it's not black, it's not white. You can actually use the smartphone appropriately. And when you look, for instance, at 2 and 3-year-olds, I know people who don't show their children tablets because mm-hmm. they feel tablets are bad. Well, if you're on a tablet with your child interacting with information, a book, an interactive book on a tablet, that is just the same thing as interacting with a child on a book. It really is not that different than interacting with them in a book. And I think that's where smartphone use comes into play.
So screen doesn't necessarily always equal bad.
Screen is not always bad. And I think that's what we learned from this.
Let's go now to another caller. This is a caller in Racine, Wisconsin.
I am wondering if you have heard of mewing, M-E-W-I-N-G, and is it worthwhile doing? Look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Mewing. Now, when I think of mewing, I think of sheep because you go mew, mew, mew when I was a kid. I have no idea what mewing is.
Is that a cat?
It's a cat. Mew, mew. Well, maybe it's a cat. My mother said it was sheep. Your mother said it was a cat. That's right.
Well, I wasn't sure if you had heard of this one, Zorba. I did a little
Sure. I mean,
you've heard of everything.
I mean, I hear a lot of things, but mewing is not on my top list.
So I did a little bit of online research because I had never heard of mewing, M-E-W-I-N-G. I'll just read a little bit of, you know, some of the bullet points about mewing and then maybe you can comment.
Bullet points about mewing. That's great. Okay. Now, is this like a poster presentation in the UW Medical School they used to do with science? Or these are just poster points from the web?
This is from the web. There's a lot of mewing YouTube videos. Let me explain it to you and you tell me what you think. Okay, mewing is a technique that some people claim can improve the aesthetics of your jawline. Mewing involves placing the tongue against the roof of the mouth while closing the lips and setting the teeth together. The supposed benefits of mewing include a well-defined jawline and improved alignment of the chin and nose. Now, anecdotal reports have also suggested, these are the ones you love, it can help resolve sleep apnea, breathing and swallowing problems.
How about political disagreements if you mew? Go ahead, keep going.
Does that mean just keeping your mouth shut? Like don't engage?
So you don't engage. Yeah. Don't tell me about it. I'm mewing.
Anyways, it got its name from Dr. John Mew, who is an orthodontist who came up with the technique and he coined the term orthotropics.
I love it.
Anyways, in the last few years, it's gotten really popular. There's a lot of, if you go on YouTube, and search mewing, you'll see hundreds of before and after mewers. What do you think, Zorba?
Well, first of all, I think your jawline is determined by your face. And once I base. It's also determined by how fat you are. If you're heavier, your jawline looks different than if you're thin. You know, if you're born with high cheekbones, your jawline looks better. And high cheekbones sort of give the aesthetic look that we happen to like in our society. Many people like in our society. We go, my goodness, look at how beautiful that person is. Often they have a high zygomatic arch. They're thin, and so their jawline changes. I don't think mewing does much. But maybe people who mew think it does much, and therefore when they look in the mirror, they feel really, really good. And I think if you look at the YouTube, which I, when I get off the show, I'm going to look at the YouTube, and you look at the people who have better jawlines, they probably lost 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 pounds. And that improved their jawlines because their face was not as round, because when you lose weight, your jawline changes because you have less fat in your cheeks. So, do I think mewing makes a difference? If you mew instead of eating those extra calories, that will make a difference. So maybe that's a new, I got it, Carl. I got it. Nope. Okay. I got it. It's the weight loss program that we haven't yet studied. Mew yourself to lose pounds. That's the title of what it is. And we're there, man. We are there.
Mew yourself to a new you.
Oh, that's it. You got it. That's, you know, it. Something? You should have gone into pictures.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. But we got to take a break, Zorba. Before the break, let's check in with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. All right, Zorba, today's infraction is handed out by a listener, Kate, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Kate writes, Dr. Zorba, I enjoy your show, including the delicious recipes, but on today's show, you wondered why there were no punctuation police, only grammar police.
Okay.
I realize you meant to be funny, but it only made me shake my head. Meant to be funny. That's the story of my life, I feel like.
And comma, meant to be funny, comma. Shake my head, comma. Let's use the right punctuation.
All right, Kate continues. Did you know that there are many books on grammar, but no punctuation books? Why is that? Well, it's because grammar includes punctuation.
But I will disagree with this. Please go on.
Okay, before you react to that one, Zorba, this email, it piqued my curiosity. So I did a little research online, and I found out that, you know, does grammar include punctuation? People are generally pretty split on that.
But you mean they're the grammar police, imagine the punctuation that. Police? Imagine that, comma. No exclamation point.
But I found something somebody wrote that was kind of interesting on a website, and they wrote this. Punctuation marks are just like zippers for your purses. They help to protect your valuables. A bag without buttons or zippers may not carry important things. They add beauty, strength, and life to your sentences. A sentence without properly used punctuation is a mere skeleton. So I don't know what you think. Something,
you know, these grammar people. Well, there is a book on punctuation. It's a famous book that was a bestseller. I don't know if you ever read it. It's a great book called Eats, Shoots, and Leaves. So, and then punctuation is eats, comma, shoots, and leaves. That's one way of looking at those three, right? Mm-hmm. Or eats, comma, shoots, comma, and leaves. It means totally, those are totally different things, right?
Right.
Based on punctuation. The book is a dynamite book. It really is a funny, funny book about punctuation. And for anyone, any of you grammar police out there, you punctuation people, if you have not read Eats, Shoots, and Leaves, you ought to read it because it is a funny good book, and you will learn a lot about grammar. You know, I have to tell you, lately I've been using semicolons. You ever use semicolons?
I don't use them a lot, no. I enjoy it when I see it used, but I don't use it a lot.
Well, I've been using them a lot because it's quicker for me to use than the dash. I used to use a lot of dashes, but for a dash, I have to hit shift and hit the dash. Mm-hmm. So I got to use two fingers. I got to use my left index finger, my right index finger go up there, and sometimes I hit the zero instead of it. Whereas if I want to do semicolon, it's only a little finger, and I've been using semicolon more and sending things out. And you know what? I feel good about that. I feel kind of righteous. I'm using the semicolon instead of the dash. So it's proper. And I think Mrs. Kahn, who was one of my English teachers, may she rest in peace, is probably thinking, Pastor, you finally got it.
Would you like to join the ever-growing grammar police? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at...
with a punctuation mark, Zorba at WPR dot, that's dot, period, org.
Many more of your calls to come, more of your emails as well. And we're going to hear from Tom Clark during our recipe segment. All that's coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Okay, we know you don't just listen to the show to get Zorba's healthy living advice. You also come here for Chef Tom's culinary expertise and refined palate. So let's head over to Tom Clark's kitchen where Zorba and Tom are busy putting together a mozzarella tomato and orzo salad.
Thanks so much, Carl. 800-462-7413 is our number. But Zorba, I don't think anybody's going to want this recipe. I've never had this. In 22 years, your recipes are wonderful, but this thing, mozzarella, tomato, and orzo salad, we can pass this one up, I think.
Not at all, Tom. I mean, come on. Do you like mozzarella? Do you like cheese? Let me ask you.
Cheese is good, yeah.
Do you like tomatoes?
Sure. They're all right.
Okay. Do you like pasta?
Yeah, but... putting this all together doesn't make any sense to me. Let's do it and see what the listeners
say. No, wait a second. Think about it. You've got a first-rate kitchen, right? You've got a sub-zero refrigerator freezer. You've got a sous chef that comes in every day, chops the vegetables for you, right?
Whatever you say.
Okay, start out with a quarter cup of extra virgin olive oil of your choice.
Quarter cup. Olive oil of my choice.
3 tablespoonfuls of red wine vinegar.
3 big tea red wine vinegar.
1 tablespoonful of dried oregano.
1 big tea dried oregano.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
A little tea salt.
1/2 teaspoon of red pepper, crushed red pepper. You could use red pepper flakes if you wanted to.
Are you serious? I hope you have a large water. If you're going to have 1/2 a teaspoon crushed red pepper, you're going to have to drink that water to satisfy your taste.
You know, I mean, some people, I mean, we live in Wisconsin, where if you have a dash of pepper, go, oh, my God, that is really odd. I mean, you know, I have a question. Did your mother ever put pepper on anything?
No,
that's what I mean. You came from a no pepper environment, right?
I don't think pepper was invented yet.
Okay, 1 pound of orzo.
1 pound of orzo.
That's right.
What's orzo?
Orzo is a pasta. It's a pasta. 1/2 pint of cherry tomatoes cut in half.
1/2 pint cherry tomatoes halved.
1 cucumber. Now, you can use an English cucumber. You know, those are those long, thin cucumbers that cost more money, but they have more meat. You can use a Persian cucumber, but you want to use a thin cucumber diced.
Yeah.
1/ cup of red onion. Have you ever bought an onion and diced it?
Moving right along.
1/4 of a red onion diced.
1/4 red onion.
That's right. 1/2 cup of freshly torn basil leaves. So you're going to buy basil leaves. You can buy them at the grocery store. Tear them in half. Okay.
1/2 cup freshly torn basil leaves.
Now I'm gonna look at this and I'm gonna wonder if you've ever seen it. 1 pound of mozzarella, preferably 1 pound of small mozzarella balls.
1 pound of small mozzarella balls.
Do you know what that is?
Not a clue.
Not a clue. Well, you can buy these small mozzarella balls. They're really good. Let's make the recipe. So in a small bowl, whisk together the dressing ingredients. Give it a taste. Adjust the salt and crushed red pepper to your liking. Add a little bit of red pepper. I definitely would add more because we love red pepper. Bring a pot of salted water to a boil. Cook the orzo according to the package instructions, usually about 7-8 minutes. Drain it, rinse it under cold water immediately. Transfer it to the fridge to chill right away for about 15-20 minutes. And then add to the boiler pot, add the orzo, top it with the cherry tomatoes, the cucumber, the red onion, the basil, and the mozzarella. This is after you put the dressing on top. And bon appetit. You've got a mozzarella, tomato, and orzo salad. And you know what we're going to call this? We're going to call this Tom Salad. That's what we're going to call it. Tom Salad. Because he loves this salad. He may not say he loves it, but he loves this salad.
Okay. let the listeners decide. I'll tell you what. Anybody that actually makes this recipe, let Zorba know. 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's send it back to Carl now.
Thanks, Tom. Let's get back to our callers now. And here's a caller in the Peach State, Georgia.
Hello, Zora. My question is this. I've been here in the United States a little over 20 years, so I'm more or less an American. Recently, I just learned that most of the processed food which we buy from the supermarket has a chemical. Generally, they call it corrosive. To my understanding, this is to extend the shelf life of the product like tears. So I was very concerned maybe this is the very reason why most people get like heart disease or diabetic or other similar disease because of this chemical. When I was growing up in Africa, we don't have all this chemical in our food supply. So please, I would like to know if this thing affects the health of an individual by eating this food product, please let me know so I can avoid. Normally, I don't eat them. I do, prepare my food, but it will help me if these things really affect me so I can stop eating this processed food. Thank you.
You know, there are certain chemicals that are used to extend the shelf life. So let's start, for instance, with perishables. So perishables don't have chemicals. On the other end, they put them on, put them on the shelf. They want to keep them nice and clean. So they often have to keep away bacteria that are on there. I have no idea what they actually wash the area with, but I'm sure they wash the area where you have your produce, and they must wash it down with some sort of a solution, right? They want the produce to look bright and beautiful, and they may end up using chemicals there to do that. I've never even thought about that. And I've never thought about whether or not in some grocery stores where things look pristine, do they actually spray anything on the produce to make it look more pristine. Now, as far as chemicals that are used in processed foods, I like to follow Michael Pollan's guideline. If it has more than 5 ingredients, it's artificial. Now, I don't think it's exactly more than 5 ingredients, but his idea is the more ingredients you have, the more artificial it is, the more processed it is. And maybe the risk factor, I think we'll talk about that later, for diabetes and other diseases are really based on food processing. So I think the goal is not to eat processed foods, to eat more natural foods. Read the ingredients on there, open up a box, look at the ingredients. The fewer the ingredients, the better off you are. And whether or not these chemicals are causing diabetes and others, that's a question the FDA has been looking at for years. And they rate chemicals for foods as generally qualified as safe or generally considered safe. What does that mean? Well, it means that they've done research and they haven't seen that it doesn't look like it's bad. That's about where it is. They can't say for sure it's not bad. Doesn't look like it's bad. And that's where science comes in. Science is always a maybe, a probably, but it's never an absolute. It's pretty much never an absolute. And in science, lots of things are in the gray zone. Chemicals used in food, in the gray zone. Keep it natural. Make your own food.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners, and they have so many great questions. But we also get calls from listeners offering up their comments or their health tips. Let's take some time now to hear a few of these calls and these comments. This is a segment called Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do. We appreciate it very much.
Sweet. Oh, so sweet. So
nice,
sweet.
Nice little ballad for that.
I like it.
Let's hear from a caller in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
I have a suggestion for getting rid of the garlic breath. You eat an apple after you have the garlic, and something magically happens. It totally eliminates garlic breath. Thank you. Goodbye.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to have to try that next time I eat garlic bread. I'm going to eat garlic bread. I'm going to make sure my wife, Penny, doesn't eat garlic bread. Then I'm going to eat an apple, and I'll let you know from the smooch point of view of whether or not she actually goes, wow, you don't smell like garlic at all. I'll have to try it. I have never heard of the apple cure for garlic bread. I think it's a great idea. We ought to have, you know, I'd really like our listeners to chime in, eat lots of garlic bread, and then have an apple. Normally, they don't serve an apple, you know, after you have garlic bread, usually a pizza or spaghetti.
Right.
But let's see at the end of a garlicky meal if eating an apple gets rid of that garlic smell. I'd like to know that. You know something? I'm going to try it. I think our listeners should try it. And I would love people to chime in on whether or not the apple cure for garlic bread actually works.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. Call the show anytime. Leave your comment or question. Before we take a break, Zorba, we always appreciate our listeners posting on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page.
We do. I really love the comments. Some of them are really positive. Some of them are a little bit negative, and then there are a few that are snarky. But I really do. And I love it when people go to that Facebook page because we can do up-to-date information on COVID. And frankly, it's going to be up-to-date information on COVID moving forward. So come to that Facebook page. Look at the updates. I try to do that on a regular basis to fill people in so they've got good, reliable information.
Yep. And it also fuels this next segment, all those comments. So this is the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Okay, Zorba, like we just said, lots of action on the Facebook page. So let's jump right in here. First up, Jason in Knoxville, Tennessee says, Zorba, what is your opinion on playing outdoor sports like softball? We have a league that is starting soon, and I would like to play again, if only for mental health.
The reality is you're outside. And the reality is if you want to play when you're outside, you're playing something like softball, you're going to be closer than 6 feet. And the recommendations are, if you're closer than 6 feet, you wear a mask. So is there a risk? Lower risk outside, lower risk outside with a mask. But frankly, a contact sport, and softball can be a contact sport, means you're bumping into somebody. And if you're going to do it with a mask, that's going to lower the risk. Is it zero? No, but you know something? We live in an environment, you know, where zero is very hard to reach, because then you have zero in your mental and your social skills and you go crazy. So you got to make a decision. I wouldn't do it without a mask. And as a side, I have a trainer. I went and exercised, which I do on a regular basis. I have learned to exercise wearing a cloth mask. My trainer wears a cloth mask. It's not an N95. It couldn't do that. But I wear a cloth mask. He wears a cloth mask, and I train. So how are we going to do this in the middle of the COVID epidemic? You might want to do it. Anyone who has a fever should not play, and you bring a thermometer, and everyone checks themselves, and they have a fever. They go home. In other words, do it the smart way to reduce it. If anyone feels sick, they don't go on the team. And you wear masks when you play. And you see what happens. That's it.
And finally, Zorba, this one comes from Ed, who is in central Wisconsin. Dr. Zorba and Tom, I've listened for years and love your show for your sound medical advice, but mostly your infectious laughs. During COVID, your podcasts have been a blessing as I go for heart-healthy walks around my neighborhood.
Nice.
Just the sound of your voices has been truly comforting, and I'm sure people who see me out snickering and smiling as I listen, they probably wonder, what is wrong with this guy? So many thanks to both of you for your heartwarming program. I'm writing today as I could use your help. I have the dreaded toenail fungus, which started on my little toe with thickening of the nail and discoloration, and now involves all my nails on one foot. I've heard that many of the prescriptions are blacklisted. Are there any topical remedies that are effective? Topical remedies are all over the web, and I suspect they fall into Zorba's favorite term of quackery. What do you think?
Well, a lot of them are quackery. Vicks VapoRub, mayonnaise, those are two that come to mind. There's a bunch of quackery. But there is a topical cure that is a prescription cure. And the name of it, I believe, is Penlac, P-E-N. P as in Peter, E, N as in Nelly, L-A-C, Penlac. I think that's the name. I'm not 100% sure. Don't quote me. The pharmacist would know. But it is a topical antifungal, you know, so it's you're not taking it orally, medication that has been proven. It's a proven in double-blind placebo-controlled trials to actually get rid of toenail fungus. Now, it was name brand. I don't know if it's a generic yet. It might be expensive. You go to goodrx.com, see what it costs on goodrx.com. But the reality is this stuff actually works. Now, when it goes to the oral medicine, Lamisil, L-A-M-I-S-I-L, generic, 250 milligrams, 1 week a month. So you take it for 7 days, off for 21 days, on for 7 days, off for 21 days, three times, on for 7 days, off for 21 days. So you're only putting in your body for 7 times 3 or a total of 21 days. That works as well as taking it every day for 90 days. Makes a big difference. So you're reducing the risk of side effects. So that's a way to take the oral stuff. But the topical stuff works. It's been proven. You might want to go and do that because it's the best. And as for mayonnaise on the toes, I don't think it's going to work.
That sounds interesting. Thanks for all the comments on Facebook. And if you have a question or comment to add to the show, don't forget you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org. That's the punctuation term, .org.
O-R-G, org. We have many more of your calls to come. We have another topic to discuss. And Zorba will, of course, be answering more of your emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just hear yourself on an upcoming show. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, there's a new study showing that eating more fruits, vegetables, and grains may lower your risk for diabetes.
Oh, it's a really important study from the British Medical Journal. So first of all, we know that we have lots and lots of diabetes, that diabetes has increased dramatically. How much do you think it's increased, Carl, over the last, since 1950? What do you think the prevalence of diabetes is compared to 1950?
A percentage? I'll just go with twofold.
No, it's about 10 to 20 fold. It's not twofold.
Wow.
It's an epidemic. 10 to 20 fold. Now, it does follow because people are heavier, people eating more refined foods, but there are other issues involved here. So the British Medical Journal, BMJ, published two articles that I found just fascinating. The first article had to do with a bunch of people in Britain that are part of a longitudinal study, and they measured two things. They measured vitamin C levels and levels of carotenoids. Now, carotenoids are pigments that are in fruits and vegetables. And a good example is the carotenoids. They're an orange pigment. They're in sweet potatoes. They're in yams. They're in cantaloupe. They're in a bunch of different things. And it turns out vitamin C levels and carotenoid levels are very good markers of how much vegetables you're actually eating. Now, in this particular longitudinal study, they looked at people in the study. This was a huge, humongous study, 340,000 people that have been followed over a period of time in Great Britain over a period of time, did exercises, asked what they're eating and so on. But they measured these levels at two points in time over a 12-year period. They found that people who had higher vitamin C and carotenoid levels had a lower incidence and prevalence of diabetes. And they found a direct relationship. And when you look at how many extra veggies you had to eat to keep from getting diabetes, it was only 2 to 4 ounces a day.
That's not much.
Fruits, not much at all.
Wow.
It's like half a cup of vegetables or a cup of vegetables may reduce the risk of you getting diabetes by 25%. That is astounding.
Wow.
That means we might be able to get this epidemic under control by simply going, not just eat your veggies, but just an extra cup of vegetables a day. That's not very much at all. And that may reduce your risk of diabetes. So it's not just eating those refined foods. It's not eating the fruits and veggies. Then another study, totally different study, the Nurses' Health Study, Physicians' Health Study, 158,000 women, 36,000 men. They've done food diaries all along. And they look at whole grains and whole grain, eating whole grains, eating, you know, bread that has whole grains, eating oatmeal, for instance, which is a whole grain in the morning. And they found that one serving of a whole grain cereal in the morning, one serving of whole grain bread a day may reduce your risk of getting diabetes by 15 to 20%. One serving. That's all we're talking about. One serving. So think about it. If you want to keep from getting diabetes, everyone wants to keep from getting diabetes, it may be have some whole grain cereal in the morning, have some oatmeal or a whole grain cereal of your choice, and eat another cup of vegetables during the day, and that may reduce your risk by anywhere between 25 or 50%. I mean, this is a no-brainer.
That seems like an easy adjustment to make to your eating.
It's a no-brainer. It's an easy adjustment you can make to your eating. And I think if you're interested in not getting that disease, you don't want to get diabetes, that means you could change your diet now, because we now show in these large studies dietary discretion. Eating the right amount of fruits and veggies, not that much, having some whole grain may reduce your risk of getting it by 25, 50 to 50%. Do it.
800-462-7413 is the number to call if you'd like to leave us a question anytime. And let's get back to more of your voicemails. Here's one from a caller in, now Zorba, they're from the Show Me State. What's the Show Me State?
Let me guess. Missouri.
My question is about the aphorism, laughter is the best medicine. And I wonder if Dr. Zorba has any scientifically determinable factors that might support that aphorism. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I've got a question here. So how could we do a double-blind study on laughter? You know, I mean, like, this person is laughing, but she doesn't really know that she's laughing. This person is not laughing. They don't really know they're laughing because it's cognitive. There's no way you could blind it. And well, you could look at it another way. Are happy people healthier than sad people? Well, sad people may not engage in exercise as much, may not eat the right way. They may suffer from depression and other things. But you know what? I think this is one of those things where alternative medicine plays a role, that we scientifically engaged allopathic doctors, you know, where we say things, you know, like do this, do that. You know, we don't have the hard science behind it, but we do have anecdotal information. Frankly, you know, see the glasses half empty or half full. I asked you, Carl, what would you rather do? See the world as half empty or half full?
I got to go full. I mean, you have to go full. Yeah.
That's right. So in the middle of the COVID, I've started, when I'm in my office, I'm seeing patients. When I leave them, I say, stay safe. Happy COVID. And everyone laughs.
Like it's a holiday?
Happy COVID. Yeah, happy COVID. Happy COVID. And all of a sudden, everyone starts laughing when they leave. And I thought, well, that's my greeting at the end. Happy COVID. Happy COVID to you. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic. The other thing is that in the middle of chaos and problems, people have always made jokes. They've always made jokes in the middle of egregious, difficult circumstances. Maybe not exactly at that, but they make jokes. They're not necessarily making fun, but there's something about a joke that helps you through a trauma, not at that particular moment, but at other times. And I've read a number of books about this, about how people in concentration camps that were concentration camp jokes, and what did they do? They help people through these just awful situations that none of us can really imagine what it was like. So I will stick by laughter is the best medicine, because you know what I believe? Laughter is the best medicine.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's take this opportunity to give one of our naysayers, actually one of your naysayers, I should say, a little bit of airtime. This is the segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing
Okay, Zorba, the following email came from a listener, Bill, in St. Mary's, Georgia. Bill writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, a listener asked if there was any problem with eating ice chips. You replied that, other than the possibility of breaking a tooth, you saw no harm in it, and that ice was a zero-calorie snack. However, there's always a however in these,
right? There's always a however, that's right. But, however, semicolon, however, a comma.
Comma, yeah. However, yeah. I think that ice would actually have a negative caloric value. In order to melt the ice and still maintain our body temperature, you ready for this?
I got it. Yeah, I got it. That's right.
To maintain our body temperature, we would have to burn calories from some other source.
Right.
I once heard it suggested that by eating ice, we can lose weight. I don't know if this is true, but the laws of thermodynamics tell
us that
ice has a heat of fusion of 79.7 calories per gram. You knew that, right, Zorba?
Yeah, right. Okay. It's right in my cheat sheet that I carry with me in my pocket every day in case I have a multiple choice test that I have to attend to in my physics class, please, or biology class.
Bill goes on, so in a manner of speaking, ice can absorb almost 80 times its weight in calories. Zorba, what do you think?
I think you'd have to eat a lot of ice to lose weight. But our listener is 100% in fact. Ice is a negative caloric treat. It's not zero. It's negative because you have to burn calories to melt ice. But it's a minimum number of calories you'd probably have to eat. I have no idea how much ice you'd have to eat to offset McDonald's French fries. Maybe someone out there can do the calculation of how much ice you would have to eat in your mouth. I can do the calculation to offset the French fries from McDonald's. I would love to hear from someone in the physics police and chemical police to be able to give us an answer to that.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Or maybe you just have a chip on your shoulder? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, 800-462-7413. Let's go back to our callers. Let's hear from a caller in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi there. My question is regarding the act of swishing a teaspoon or a tablespoon of coconut oil in your mouth for 20 minutes to rid your mouth and salivary glands of toxins and verifiable benefits of that. I feel like I've observed good effects from it in terms of, you know, making you feel better, making your mouth feel better, whitening of teeth, etc. Just wanted to see if you had heard of any scientifically backed and documented benefits of it. Thank you.
You know, when it comes to whether or not your teeth will be whiter, that's something that can actually be measured. You know, and there's a lot of whitening agents that people take to get their teeth whiter. So you can actually measure that. From a bacterial point of view, we know, for instance, that flossing using a water pick makes a really big difference. A mouthwash that contains alcohol, we know, reduces the bacteria a little bit in the mouth. You know, it's good. It makes your breath smell better when you do it, whether or not mouthwash actually improves the bacteria in your mouth, and whether or not it makes a difference is still up to debate. We know that brushing your teeth really makes a difference because it cuts down the bacteria that cause gingivitis and periodontal disease. We know that using a brush in the back of it makes a difference. So when it comes to coconut oil, there's no research that I've seen where we really can tell it makes a difference from a point of view of the bad bacteria that are causing it. We know, for instance, that eating sugary things at the end of the day especially are very bad for your teeth. That before really modern candy was introduced, there was not as much teeth decay as there is now. We know that once you have sugar in your mouth, you have it in the mouth for long periods of time, that's what produces dental decay. But whether or not it is a salubrious, whether or not coconut oil will actually, in your mouth, will actually do something, I think it's anecdotal information. It certainly will not do any harm. Certainly, if you want to swish it around, 20 minutes seems like a long time to actually swish something around. It may make a difference. Whether or not you feel better and your mouth feels better, you certainly can try it. There are a lot of negative things that go into the mouth, specifically tobacco products, along with, you know, with sweet products too. So yeah, I would try it. I don't know of any scientific studies on it. Coconut oil now is hot for a lot of things, for cooking and a lot of things. And try it. Maybe you'll like it.
And before we head out today, Zorba, I'm going to reach my well-sanitized hand into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health email bag and pull out a few listener emails. So both of these emails are coffee-related, Zorba. So this is going to be our coffee double shot.
I'm game. Yep.
All right. First up is an anonymous listener who writes, Zorba, you're always touting coffee, but never mention fiber cystic breast disease. Years ago, I found a lump in my breast, and the first thing the doctor asked was, how much coffee do you drink? He told me to cut out the caffeine and the lump would disappear. Well, he was 100% correct. Coffee caffeine is not good for every woman.
Well, it may turn out that information, although it disappeared, may be correct and may not be correct. The studies are very, very minimal on coffee and fibrocystic disease. And so it still is sort of a controversial topic. But any woman who has fibrocystic disease can try something like eliminating coffee and see whether or not the tenderness of fibrocystic disease goes away. Once again, the data on it is pretty spotty. But I believe anecdotal data on things like this, for which we have absolutely no cure, is something to pay attention to.
All right, Zorba, let's now hear from Mary Lou, who listens to the show on WBAA in Lafayette, Indiana. Mary Lou writes, Zorba, a physical therapist told me to drink kava due to frequent urination. I tried it, and I love it. Now they have stopped making it. So what do I do? Any other brand, and I have to urinate frequently. What's the difference?
That's not good. That's not good. It's interesting. That is a coffee substitute. You could try Postum, P-O-S-T-U-M. Now, Postum was really popular in World War II, a long time ago, because the coffee was sent overseas to the guys who were actually fighting in the trenches. But I would try Postum or I would try another drink. But Postum may be a substitute for kava. And I used to like Postum. I used to drink it years ago. And you know what? I'm going to go out and buy some and see whether or not I like it today.
All right. Thanks for all those questions and emails. And listeners, if you have a question or comment to add to the show, just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well. I can't say Tom. Stay well, Carl.
All right. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web at
ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 1-800-462-7413. And please do visit the Facebook page for Zorba's frequent coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.